Michael Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about ethics. We have to do support for a website. So associated with this is a talk for the landing page on ethics, but it's still going to be very worthwhile. So for the landing page on ethics, there's a series of YouTube's experiences which guide a journey into ethical development of students. It's sort of a very worthwhile thing. So towards the end of the year, when there's a free lesson, I often do with year 7 students a talk on fundamental ethics, the science, interaction of science and ethics. So and then I have a series of very thought-provoking things like the bystander effect. That's where if someone's hurt, people, if they've got a social code, won't help that person. Or the Ash experiment, that's where there's conformity. There's a whole series of things that people see, and it's thought-provoking in the framework of ethics. Now, let's talk about ethics. Ethics, this is just working definitions. These are not the full definitions, but ethics, I think the most fundamental thing is to say it's a contemplation of the future. That is, from the present, or it is selection of an appropriate future, which, depending on your framework, is more just and fair. And so there's this concept of a different path that you could go to. At the heart of ethics, I believe, there's different futures. And there's some maintenance of the best future, but there's also an idea of maintaining an ethical engine which you bring forward. So you can actually bring forward in the future, you would like people to be more ethically educated, so in their future they can be more ethically further onwards. So it's not just a single step into the future, it's a step in the future where you have ethical training, ethical systems come in. So it's no good having, say, the best drug trial in the world, and then at the end of it, there's no drug control systems, there's nothing, there's no systems for it. It's a forward thinking. Now, again, I suppose this is concept of being able to propose different futures. That is, there's one future, or future B, future A, B, or C, to be able to discuss and compare them, and to foresee what's the unforeseeable, or the how the unexpected might play out, and the systems associated with it. So this is sort of, I mean, this is obviously what you don't give kids, but there is this higher, complex level of ethics going forward. Now, I haven't talked about the engine of ethics or how it goes across, but it's the idea of going forward. Now, obviously, decisional how it goes forward represents your entire society. There's very little being highly ethical if you're a prisoner and you've got no rights, you've got nothing to influence. You can, it's a very abstract thought, but it's the way that the society operates, and it sort of goes really back philosophically in terms of that are people products, or are they, in terms of your ethical world, and therefore you've got a duty of care to these people who can't interact with you. They're children or servants or people under your care, duty of care ones, or have they consented to you acting on their behalf, and therefore they're involved in the ethical discussion all the way through. So part of their informed consent is you communicating the ethics that you're employing for them as it's going along. So there's those two aspects to it, and this idea of consent being a key aspect is something philosophically, I suppose, I've only recently realized from reading Nicholas de Cusa and that key aha moment, saying that there's power, but power really is only fair and ethical if there's consent, and therefore me reversing that is that consent is not just given. So I consent you to come into my house and cook a roast for me. Person goes in, they cook a roast, and they go drink your wine, paint your ceiling, change your electrics. Oh, you consented me to do that. Is that the ongoing consent? So there's this thing, we do have a consent, a limited consent in elected democracies, where you consent for a certain amount of time, and then that means that the person can produce laws under these circumstances. So there's a consent, a moderate consent giving to people. Now, this has got a throwback into how you actually function with ethics. Do you do ethics as something, oh, we're in the management group, we're going to be ethical on your behalf? That type of a tough aspect. Now, so there's some sort of analysis of here and now, or here or now and the future, and there's a methodology of analysis, and there's an openness, transparency of analysis, that one's analysis should be able to be explained to the people involved for ethics to be ethical. That's the one with unethical ethics. But we can't really get into there's a methodology I prefer, which is sort of scientific, rules-based, rational-based, but I really think part of this consent of bringing everyone along, really everyone should be able to be a contributor, and they mightn't use your exact technique, and therein comes the, I suppose, the candor of inclusiveness, that someone may have a set of beliefs that the male of the family is the arbitrator and whatever, or that there's a rule book that you can look up, whereas I have a sort of more scientific evidence based proof, and that's so when you're presenting a course on ethics, you've got to be aware of all these different subtleties going on. So the subtlety that are you in a system of where the power given to you or your ability to make a decision is by consent and discussion? And of course, that's always not true, because if someone's going to game the system and outmaneuver you, so if you tell them too much of what's going on, they can actually, that's the real world aspect. And there's also the real world constraint of time. But there's also the acknowledgement that there are other considerations. So, say, if you're dealing with an ancient culture, you make a decision, which is ethically right in one way. You just have to really understand that for the continuation of the ancient culture, things just can't go with you necessarily in charge. Just along the lines of you arrive at the ethically correct decision, but one of those things is that your ethical engine is well in track, in touch, well tuned and understood, and you can actually clearly say in the future, well, how do we get here? So with this unstructured, very open-ended question that can be asked going ahead, and you are in the future. So I suppose one fundamental law of ethics is that you arrive at future with your state of ethics greater than it was previously. You know, the same if not better. Your ethics are in better condition, which is sort of a hard thing to do. So you may actually wind up with an unethical outcome, But however, if everyone's going to be more ethical in the future, it's hard to think about. So one of the things I do have is this sort of, what does maths have to say about it? And what does psychology have to say about it? And being a sort of an intelligent consumer of both maths and psychology. So I'll just quickly go over a series of YouTubes or videos which get the general feel of it. Now the first one is this beautiful mix of music and animation called the Fibonacci series. Now there's just something about it in terms of the pace and the thought. This is the idea of being able to mathematically compute the world, and the feeling of what it is to be, I don't have intelligence, I have maths, and that feeling of centeredness. And if you look through it, it's that beautiful thing, and you see just so much that awe of going forward. And it is, I suppose, that sense that as someone coming into an ethical situation, you shouldn't be bound by, oh, I've reached the conclusion. You should have this expanse of innovation which goes through and considers it in ever, ever more greater detail. And it just never finishes, and it's this beautiful thing. So that Fibonacci series is great. There's that, and I'll put it up there. And it's a, I think you can YouTube it yourself. It's search. It's Fibonacci numbers, and it might have a picture of a sunflower or a dragonfly. And to actually see the number of that, that's something great. Then there's another section called another sort of numerical thing, and that's using maths. Oh, I've forgotten what it's hands and like a Swedish statistician, and he just talks about ignorance. I think he's got the Ignorance Center, and he's saying that a lot of education is teaching people ignorant views which are out of date. They're teaching people to sit the exams that the teacher didn't successfully sit, reinforcing the prejudices that were around popular at the time of their teachers type of thing. And he does human population growth, wealth, but showing it through statistics. And there's hands and something rolling. I'll put it up there nonetheless. But this is the prelude to warm you up mathematically, to say, to be aware of your mathematical insight as something that you can bring to ethics. Now, that's one thing you can bring. You can bring a whole lot of other things to ethics, and it's like basically a human activity, fundamental human activity, depending on what the sort of humanity, if you want a powerful person running the place, let the powerful person do it. But if you want an inclusive thing, you really want to include yourself and include other cultures, viewpoints, feelings, life experience, and put it all into the pot and sort of just mash it through, work it through. But on the maths aspect, there's that feeling of maths awe, and then the feeling that the maths is going to tell you things which is going to challenge you. And that's the Ignorance Institute. I've forgotten what it is. Beautiful, beautiful things about human population, growth, numbers. I'll see if I can put it down there in the YouTube. So I won't put it on the podcast. I'll put the podcast link to the web page in the bigger aspect. And it might be done. This podcast will be out there, and come back to it, and there'll be a link to the web page where I put things up. So these are the warm-up acts. Now, one of the things I suppose that we want to first get is the ASH experiment. Now, the ASH experiment is something which is just really gripping, because there's a film of this psychology experiment, which is a rigorous psychology experiment, where they have someone coming in a group situation with, say, 8 people there, and there's 7 people, or there's people come in, and of the 8, 1 is the actual subject, the others are paid actors. And this is to do a perception test, and what they have is they have to say which line is the longest line in these diagrams. Of course, the rest of the group give the wrong answer, and within a certain amount of time, someone else, the person looking there, agrees with them because they want to go along with the group, which is the ASH experiment. It's a very beautiful, beautiful thing. You see this time of this person who's doing it, and then he gives an answer, and then someone else gives a wrong answer, and you can see the face going, what's going on here? But then after a certain while, he goes along. And this is a sort of fundamental thing for ethics, in terms of ethics. The majority goes, but if the majority conformity is operating in it, or biases are operating in it, the simple mechanism of quick, have a vote, let's move on, we haven't got time, we've got a lot of time to go here, let's move on, can hide these fundamental things. So, sort of the sense of maths and the sense of integrity going across. That's the ASH experiment. There's other social rules. This is getting down to it. Other social rules as the Milken's milligrams shock treatment. And what happens is that these people in this setup are going up, and they come up and they say, we're doing an experiment. The extra person turns up, another actor turns up, and they have what seems like a random way of selecting the person to administer the shock, which is the actual subject, and the actor gets the shock put on them, and they have to deliver increasing voltages to the person as they answer these questions. Of course, as they answer the question incorrectly, they get these shocks and say, oh, help, stop doing it. And the person in the white lab coat pushes them forward. Now, what I find really interesting about this is that this puts a conformity that people will follow the teacher, will follow the school, or will follow the situation, even if it's wrong and there's nothing they can do about it. And there's this idea of increasing the pain associated with it. Now, that's very informative. Sort of like releasing people through a series of thoughts. One, that they are a mathematical person. Two, that the mathematical thing can give them insights, views on the ignorance. Three, that ignorance can be a conformity bias. Whatever it is. Next one's the Milgram's, the idea that you can be in a system and people can be doing things because they're in that system. Now, there's sort of another aspect to it, that the Milgram test has now come under question, because certain people went over the top rather than actually believing it. They believed it couldn't possibly be true. It must be an actor, and they went over it just to have a bit of fun. And so the actual, when that came out, it turned out these results weren't as effective. But there goes in the important thing. It's not necessarily true that the mathematics and the science is correct. It's the actual conceptualization of that idea. So even though all the scientific rigor went there and the scientific rigor wasn't there, the actual concept of putting that forward concept is there. The final thing the view of the ethical program which is in play at the moment, which is the bystander effect. Now, bear in mind, this is a lot to pack in just one lesson. And there's a sort of an outstanding consequence of this, which is the most amazing thing which actually did happen. The bystander effect: actor feigns illness and collapses in a subway. Now, the actor is poorly dressed and looks like a tramp. People ignore them and walk past them, and they have people looking at the footage of it and explaining what's going on. So people are following a hidden rule of not to help that person, and once one person helps, then everyone helps. It's basically, people are very rule given, and so this is sort of like the people don't have their ethics antenna switched on, or their thinking antenna switched on. And I must admit this is very much true for any situation. You have people come into a factory to work. The first couple of days they're not switched on to the product and all that type of stuff. In army, the first couple of days they're just not switched on that the soldiers are standing out in the open, they're doing all things wrong. It takes a while for their mental state to go on. So you can really see people bringing in a mental state, and they don't switch on. I can't quite describe it. I don't know what I'm talking about there. It's hard to go across. Now, what happens is that it's in England, of course, is a dapper person in a suit coat. They fall over, and within seconds, people come over. "Are you all right, sir?" "Oh, I thought he might have crushed his coat," said someone. And they said, and that's, these are all really not getting down to ethical problems and how you solve it. So what's not necessarily is the respect the community. I suppose if you get through to ethical problems, that would be great. This is just an introduction into, hang on, if, you know, should you, you know, as a scientist, should really allow people from indigenous communities with different backgrounds to have their say, and it's not necessarily about the ethical situation. It's just that can everyone live with the situation as it's coming forward? And you can bring in sort of systems like the Rawlsian system of justice about a model, or does anyone have another model? This is a very high level encompassing things. Now, what's really interesting, so we'll get back to the end result of this, but what's really interesting is that that's not necessarily reflected in the way people come back. People have this rank given idea that I've now made the boss, I'm now responsible for those people. Yes, I am responsible, but and then I can make decisions without consulting them. And if I don't understand science, well, that's the end. That doesn't count. Like, if I don't understand it, it doesn't count. And so that gives you a problem, that you may understand something and you have to decide sort of this complicated thing that there's a small change, ethical issues, and you let let it through to the keeper. It's not right, but let's get the show on the road, let it go through the keeper. And what this does is sort of establishes a norm of let's not listen to the scientist in this. And sort of this lesson sequence is opening up the inner scientist without stating it and letting that go through, but also the understanding that the effectiveness of having a scientific viewpoint is part of the palette of the strongest method of looking at things. So we come back to this sequence of lessons, and there's this jaw-dropping silence as people listen to it and watch these things and have these discussions. And then what happened is that these boys, straight after the lesson, were at their local Penrith station, and they looked at it, they saw a lady who was sick, they stopped, went to a help aid, got her help, and moved on, and got people in, and came across, and then just went on their day. Now what happened is that this was all caught on CCT footage, and this sent a chill down the spine of the people in the railroads, and they made a big effort, and they came up and said, look, we want to identify these people. And the girls at school thought, oh my god, they've graffitied or something like that. No, they wanted to award them a medal. And of course the people who are not switched on to, so this is a great thing, they had a thing, and these kids were, kids that in the system, I could say this because, they have identified that these people are not going to succeed or in our environment, our strong environment. And then that, people went along and said, it's the school. They identified all these other factors which weren't key factors to building up the ethical stuff. They said, oh, it's the Australian blah, whatever it is, or it's such and such a situation, or they were members of this group and stuff like that. And this is not the only example of this sort of thing happening. There are people who on this short amount of education, one lesson a year education, say, oh, I've thought about it. I realise that I've been told to muck up in your class by so-and-so, and I realise this is wrong. So it's amazing how this sort of thing can go, but it's not a quick thing for it, and it's not a wham-bam, it all happens at once. There are these times where you have to actually just sit back for a few minutes, probably an hour or so, and enjoy very good music, enjoy maths, and enjoy sort of the sophistication of a situation where everyone has their say, everyone gets brought along, and that a reasonable outcome is that the ethical strength of the society that you're bringing forward is greater. You've got a fairer, stronger society. And what is happening is that there are so many things which work against it. These slick marketing things, these, I suppose, political promises which are broken. But at the end of the day, we've got this beautiful system where we have this huge wealth, huge times with everyone, lots of food and wealth. Australia's one of the wealthiest countries for a while. And there's a propensity for people not to really understand it and to actually go on with all this huge wealth and actually work out a way to upset other people. It's sort of like this great tragedy, this beautiful, open, friendly society, yet there are people there who are trying to make it upset, because that's how they operate. So that's going to be the ethics aspect of it. It hasn't really dealt with what ethics, what you should do or anything like that. It's dealt how you should perhaps teach it, and how you should conduct it in this way in which there's a fundamental respect for people and their views and cultures and values of society, and a humility that I seriously don't have all the answers, but let's make sure that we're satisfied with, when we're at a situation, we ask, how did you get here? Gee, that was a decent, that person gave his best and was completely open and honest trying to get there. Thanks for listening. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.